It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, he's not lying. He is not lying. We are living the dream and taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday. Good morning here on 101.3, The Game and 101.3thegame.com. I am your host, Jeff Paul. My compadre. My Ponch to my John, the Chewbacca to my Han Solo, is our good friend from the Burlington Free Press, Austin Danforth. Good morning, my friend.
Sup, Jeff? You awake?
I am. And I love your shirt, by the way. I love the throwback shirts for me, because a Proctor Pittsford golf shirt to me is a throwback for me. A young guy from Rutland, Vermont.
Yeah.
I used to have a couple of those Proctor Pittsford shirts.
Oh, yeah.
I love
yeah.
those things.
Yeah. I got a closet full of them.
I know you do. I love it. I love it. Aaron Wells back from vacay. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you too. We got a phone call, so I just stayed.
Oh, I said but one word.
It's very good to see
in.
You.
We barely got
as
on the
a
air.
Fellow LeBron hater.
Yeah, man. We're happy for LeBron's demise today. Mm-hmm. I'm not happy. I'm not a hater of LeBron. I don't like his. We'll get into that later. But anyway, 655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. 802-655-6672. Or you can text us in the Town Fair Tire text line at the exact same number, 802-655-6672. Text us along and give us your ideas on what's going on today. Obviously, a huge week in sports.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that. But, hey, it's 4th of July weekend. Happy 4th of July. Happy Independence Day. Did you have a good weekend? First of all, did you have a good holiday? Having a good long weekend?
So, I had an unconventional week.
Yeah.
Two half days. Took Wednesday off. Enjoyed the sunshine. Went out on a boat with some friends.
Yeah.
Watched the fireworks from another friend's apartment above Battery Street. It was fantastic. Then I worked on the 4th.
It was
stuff I'd put off the couple days before,
and, right?
You know, holiday pay, a little extra coin in the
there
pocket.
You go.
So it was just strategic move.
I was gonna say, perfectly strategic move by you. So well done there. 4th of July for me has been great. So my wife's family is all here. So my wife's from Bangor, Maine, but her sister is from and my brother-in-law are down from Pennsylvania and their kids. And my buddy and my brother-in-law, Joe's best friend, Matt, flew in from Detroit. So we had a house full. My family was here and a bunch of friends came up. So it was an awesome week and my family with Romanto. I own Romanto's Pizza. So when I'm one of the owners of Romanto's, we walk in the Williston Parade every year. So we did that on the 4th of July. So
okay.
I'm feeling this week though. Like I'm exhausted.
I'm tired.
I'm a little raspy voice. Like I'm exhausted. Like I mean, I'm telling you, like I'm not young anymore. Like I'm wiped out. I need a nap.
You look like you're running on empty.
Yeah, I appreciate you telling me how good I look this morning too. That's very nice of you. So thank you very much. But
anyway. That national championship hat on your head though. That I do. That
I got my Virginia hat right on my head today. Exactly right. Hey, listen, big trade last night and a big signing. I think it was probably at least after I went to bed, because I went to bed like at 11 o'clock last night. But Kawhi Leonard signs with the Los Angeles Clippers. And also happening, there's a big trade with Oklahoma City sending Paul George and like 37 draft picks back to Oklahoma City, goes to the Clippers as well. So now we've got a super team in the Staples Center, and it's not the Lakers. It's Los Angeles Clippers.
Yeah, how about that? I mean, you wake up and all of a sudden the Lakers are... The Lakers with LeBron are probably the second best team in LA.
No question on paper. There's no question. And I think it took a lot of people by, I think it's shocked a lot of people. I think it's taken a lot of people by storm to think that they did this. And obviously the haul that I think Oklahoma City got in return is impressive. I think it's 5 first round draft picks and there's a couple players involved. We'd have to get it up because it's happened so quickly here. But I mean, what a move for Los Angeles. I mean, the Clippers, an organization that we know has been trying to be relevant for a long time. They put a lot of money into that organization. They've been close with Chris Paul over the years. We know that it was a real laughing stock through the 80s and 90s. The Clippers were just a dumpster fire in the NBA.
They were just so atrocious.
But maybe now they are the odds-on favorite. I mean, and again, it's way early and there's a lot of things that can happen here, but they on paper are the odds on favorite to win the championship next year.
They're on that short list. That's for sure. I mean, and like you said, it's crazy. Growing up, if you get like a new NBA video game, when you're like getting a feel for the game, the team you fire up to play against was the Clippers.
That's a good call.
I mean, it wasn't the case a few years ago when they had Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, and that was sort of they got to enjoy a little success there. This is poised to be something else entirely.
It really is. And I got to tell you, I mean, and for LeBron James, I mean, and what they're doing with the Los Angeles Lakers, I mean, with that big trade to get Anthony Davis, they were putting all their, and we talked about this last week. I mean, the big mistake that I felt it was for the Lakers put all their eggs in this basket for this, say, maybe 1 or 2 years of a little bit of success and a potential championship. But now you're looking at an organization with the Los Angeles Lakers that didn't get Kawhi Leonard. You know, you're looking at a team that's got Anthony. Did they sign Danny Green last night?
They signed Danny Green, 2 years, $30 million.
$30 million. So now you've got a shooter in Danny Green, but I wouldn't say difference maker by any stretch of the imagination to play with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, two guys that have shown to be a little bit fragile. LeBron was injured a lot last season. We know AD's history with injuries. So the Lakers went from a week ago, they were the odds-on favorite to win this thing, and I think people thought Kawhi was going to go there, to now the Lakers have a very small roster with no future. Yeah. and the best player in the world that's probably the eldest player in the world in LeBron James, and a guy that's up and coming in Anthony Davis, but gets hurt all the time.
Well, right now the NBA is a game of 5-minute managers who are also NBA players. LeBron tried to do it by making the best players on his team, him, basically a 34-year-old declining superstar.
Yep.
Anthony Davis, an injury-prone superstar whose offensive contribution is only within 10 feet, and now he's got a 3-and-D role player as their third best player. And Kawhi did it as him, an all-NBA defender and very good scorer. Paul George could have been Defensive Player of the Year this year and a very good scorer and much more dynamic than any of those superstars. Pat Beverly, one of the best defending guards in the league. And Montrezl Harrell, who is a crazy wild card at center and one of the most underrated centers in the NBA. Kawhi won in the game of 5-minute managers.
But don't you think if Kawhi looks at, I mean, we saw this last week. If you're Kawhi Leonard, you can go anywhere you want. Why would you pick the Lakers?
I don't know.
Why would you? Because you're looking at a Lakers organization that if everything worked out for them, let's say Kawhi Leonard goes to the Lakers and Anthony Davis stays healthy and LeBron stays healthy. So you're probably going to be pretty good. Maybe you win a championship or you're in a final this year.
Yeah.
And then maybe next year you're competitive. But after that, when LeBron decides to leave or decides to retire, you know, if it's over for him, who knows what happens there? Anthony Davis can't stay healthy. What is Kawhi Leonard going to be surrounded with there?
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he makes a decision to go to an organization that I think has a little future. I mean, they auction their future, too, to trade for Paul George, who I get what we're talking about, Paul George. I don't know if Paul George, to me, is like the guy that I thought he was going to be when he was with Indiana. And when he was with Indiana, I thought he was going to be the next real superstar. He wasn't.
Well, that freak injury.
Obviously. But I don't know if that's the reasoning in terms of, last year was a good year for him until he got hurt at Oklahoma City. But I mean, he never really got to the level that I kind of expected him to, unless maybe that injury is a problem. So I don't know if he's like, oh my God, now there's no shot. There's just no doubt in my mind that the Clippers can't win. But to me, it looks like if there's two teams playing in the Staples Center, there's one team that's got a real bright future. I think the Clippers are probably that organization over what the Lakers have today.
And I'm looking at it. So the second headline on ESPN.com is fear of the Lakers dynasty drove the Clippers deal. But you look at the deal, and granted, they're going to have, you know, Kawhi and Paul George.
Yeah.
And they're dumping money into those guys, and they'll have them for the max 4-year window. They gave up 4 future unprotected first round picks and swapped 2 other unprotected picks. So like they lost their picks in 2022, 24, 26, and then unprotected picks in 21, 23. And yeah, just
yeah,
like
for Paul George.
For one guy.
Yeah.
That's why this is 5-minute managing. These guys are not GMs, and they should not be. The problem with player colluding is that it turns into these guys make a 1-year team and then it blows up because there is no future really for either of them. It's eventually for that team going to be Paul George and Kawhi left, and it's going to be LeBron and AD left at some point too.
But I think if you look at the choices, he wanted to go to Los Angeles. I think that's case in point, end of story. He wanted to be in L.A. And I agree with what you're saying, but I think the Clippers have a 4-to-5-year window.
Right.
Where I think the Lakers have a 1 to 2 year window.
Yes.
So Kawhi Leonard in 4 or 5 years is going to be looking at the exact same thing that the Lakers are dealing with right now. But the at least the Clippers, to me, look like there's a 4 or 5 year run here that could
and then
be
it's going to be barren after that.
Exactly.
Because these guys are here for a good time, not for a long time.
Andrew from Ferrisburg just texted us here on the Town Fair Tire text line. NBA just got much more interesting. I usually don't follow. I agree with you. And I'll ask this question here. Let's get to the Green City Garage poll question. And we're going to hit the NBA pretty hard in the second hour of the show because we have some guests coming up first hour. And I want to talk about it's a great Anthony Lamb story this week that I read that I want to talk about. Yep. And I want to talk to you also. When we had Alex Abramian here covering for you, we talked about, you know, Lamb going through the process to see if he'd be drafted and where what he needs to do. And he had a great article on that a week after he was on this show. So I want to talk to you about that because I know you're close with that. But the Green City Garage located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington, 802-651-9299. Give my buddy Chris Wallace a call. You have a problem with anything in your car, I'm telling you. The Green City Garage is a place to be. And they're green, man. I mean, they're taking care of the environment, too. They're an environmentally friendly garage. So not only are they going to take care of your car, they're going to take care of the environment. Green City Garage, 651-9299. Tell them Jeff and Austin sent you from Sports Saturday. He'll take good care of you. The Green City Garage poll question, go to Twitter at 1013 The Game. The question is this disaster? Let me re-say this. Is the disastrous offseason experienced by the Knicks bad luck, or is there a real culture problem in New York? I would say that there must be a real culture problem in New York. Because to me, thinking the thought process is that she didn't want to go to the New York Knicks with all the money that they had and all the picks that they're going to have, that you wouldn't want to go back to go to New York and resuscitate one of the greatest franchises in the NBA is insane to me. I can't imagine not wanting to do that. Instead, you're choosing, you know, to go to say, we've got Kawhi going to Los Angeles. We've got Kyrie going to Brooklyn. You know, we've got Durant going to Brooklyn. Everyone's gone over the Knicks. I mean, really, there must be a serious problem there. I think it's got to be a culture problem because it doesn't look like it's bad luck to me. It looks like there's a real problem in New York.
I don't think you can call it bad luck. That's for sure.
Well, you wonder if they would have thrown more money at Durant if he didn't get hurt. And you wonder if the chips would have fallen for them. It, you know, if Durant doesn't, I mean, that they were banking on him. He was the guy.
Yeah.
You know, Achilles injury happens, and now the Knicks are thinking, okay, do we pony up all this money to this guy? And now he's got this injury. We don't know how he's going to recover. How long is he going to be out? And he ends up jumping ship and going to the team that plays across the bridge.
So I have a question for you, too. If you were the GM of the Knicks and that Durant injury happens, is he still worth the max to you?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know.
Are
you asking me this today? You're asking this question, say, the day he blows it out when you don't know where Kawhi is going. You don't know anything else. I mean, today I'm saying, yes, he is. If I'm the Knicks, I'm thinking I should have given him a max contract.
I think any player of that caliber, it's like you're buying them as much so nobody else has them.
True.
Which is what, I mean, the Yankees have done in baseball historically, you know, when they snatch up all this, you know, great talent, and there was times where they would hoard talent. You go abroad, and it's the Premier League soccer.
Yep.
It's the same thing. If you buy someone, even if they don't play for you, that means they aren't getting better for someone else.
Right.
So I don't know if that's a zero sum game, what you'd call it, but like if I have it, at least they're not winning.
But you
have to value it at that level,
but,
I think.
But I think this morning, I think that the brain trust with the Knicks has to be thinking we should have given them a max contract. We should have done something because they've all left us. We have there's nothing left. And I don't know. I haven't looked ahead enough to know who's going to be a free agent next year. Or maybe you hold on to all this money and you just go do it next season.
This seemed like the bonanza year.
It was. They're all there.
Yeah.
They're all there. And they're not going to be in New York. And so you wonder what's going on with the Knicks. I mean, I don't care what anyone wants to come back and tell you, but the Garden is the Mecca. New York City is the Mecca of basketball. I know that.
Was.
I know, it is. It still is. I mean, it's
not to draw. And the other thing with Kawhi, he is a Southern California guy.
Understood.
He might just not want to live in New York for half the
year. There's plenty of places just outside of New York City you can live that's beautiful. And if you bring the Knicks back to fruition, just like I said about the Cleveland Browns back in the day when the Cleveland was struggling and people were saying, I'm not going to play in Cleveland. Like, if you are the guy that can turn the organization around, and the Knicks had everything there. It's not like they didn't have a lot of money, but they could sign one max guy. They could have signed two or three guys. And you could have rebuilt an organization in New York and brought some excitement back to Madison Square Garden for that fan base. You'd be a god. That's why, like, you go to New York to be the god. I mean, that's when Robinson Cano left to go to Seattle. I mean, you saw what happened to Robinson Cano's career.
Yeah.
I mean, like you wonder why people leave New York. When you're in New York, that's the biggest market in the world. But they're not going there. It can't be bad luck. There's got to be a culture problem. But
also, Kawhi's never been about that. Like he's
true.
He's just true. Mr. Monotone. You
true.
Know,
very
he
true.
Grew up within the Spurs dynasty there. So that's not him. He like the,
but take could, Kawhi out of it. All okay. of them pick. All of them decided to go against the process.
Yeah.
All of them didn't
want
to go there.
It's. I mean, when you're when you can hand out max contracts, the money's the same.
Right.
The truckload of money is exactly
and
the same.
And the collusion's the same. I mean, why wouldn't you say, hey, how about we all just go to New York and blow this up, man? I mean, the New York Knicks. Think about that. New York is like it's the Boston Celtics, the New York Knicks, the Los Angeles Lakers, maybe the Chicago Bulls because of Michael. But I mean, there's three organizations in the NBA, in my opinion, three of them. That are on the Mount Rushmore of the teams that you expect to be successful. And when they're successful, it makes the NBA better. The Knicks are one of those.
And to Jeff's point, the baffling two are Kyrie and KD, because those are two guys who seem to deeply desire being showered with love.
True.
And if you do anything on the Knicks, they will shower you with love. And that's just the way New York is in general, but the Knicks have a bigger following than Brooklyn. You're going to get more love on the Knicks than you are on the Nets. And it seems like there has to be something deeply wrong with management and with the culture there.
And maybe Dolan's the big problem. Maybe the owner is.
Are you going to get more love with the Knicks and the Nets? Because, I mean, Brooklyn is like 3 million people live in Brooklyn.
I agree.
It's the younger, hipper neighborhood.
Yeah.
The younger borough it's the one that's growing
but
in New York City.
But if you're not successful in the Nets, it is not going to be as come down on you as hard with
and
you to play
I bet
for the
that's
Nets.
Attractive too.
I think that's what's attractive to Kyrie. I don't think Kyrie's the guy that wants to take the shots if they're not successful.
I don't know if all of Brooklyn is sold on the Brooklyn Nets because they've only been the Brooklyn Nets for so long. They were the New Jersey Nets before
right.
that.
But they get to slap Brooklyn on something and it's fashionable, it's hip, it's you know, like they have less baggage than the Knicks.
And let me just say this. I'm not saying that going to Brooklyn is a bad choice for them. I'm not saying that going to LA is a bad choice for Kawhi. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying when the New York Knicks have all this money and they have all these resources and they got it all right there to rebuild this organization, to bring it back, and none of these superstars choose the New York Knicks, that's not
it's
bad luck.
It's pretty damning.
That's culture.
If D'Lo had done what he did last year on the Knicks, I think he would have been like the second biggest story in the NBA.
Okay.
I mean, you might be right, but the point is the Knicks went into this offseason thinking, okay, we're going to stink to try to get Zion. It didn't happen. Now we got all this money. We're going to get Durant. We're going to get Kyrie. Maybe we can get Kawhi, and things are going to look really good, and none of them picked the New York Knicks. That's not bad luck, folks. That's not bad luck. That's bad culture. Take a quick break when we come back. Talk about bad culture. No, it's not true. I can't jack the Red Sox fans like that. We're talking Red Sox baseball with our friend from The Athletic, Jen McCaffrey. Don't go anywhere.
Now, back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
On the text line, Todd just sent us, all I know is as a Celtic fan, I'm ecstatic to see Kawhi go west. I see the East is wide open with the Celtics, Bucks, and Sixers, maybe the Nets as favorites. We're going to get to that text after, Todd, but a good text, and keep them coming at 655-6672. But joining us now on the TikTok Jewelers guest line, our good friend, Athletic Red Sox insider Jen McCaffrey. Good morning, Jen. What's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
How's your 4th of July weekend going?
Fine. I was in Toronto for the 4th, so that's always kind of funny.
All right, yeah.
Obviously, they don't do much, but yeah, otherwise, fine.
So, let's get right into these Red Sox. I mean, I think if it wasn't for the Yankees playing at the level they're playing, they'd be kind of the talk of the American League East. It was a rough trip to London, obviously. They did score a lot of runs, but gave up a lot of runs. But overall, they're playing a little bit better baseball. Agreed?
Yeah, they're... you know, last night looked like they almost blew it, and then they came back or stayed in it, I guess. The other night, they came back from that 6-1 deficit. So, yeah, I mean, that's the brand of baseball they need to be playing is, you know, the offense keeping them in it. And obviously, the pitching is the big concern and kind of has been the big storyline this year.
The big storyline also coming out now is that Nathan Eovaldi is going to come back and be the closer. What's your take on that?
Yeah, you know, we talked to Dombrowski on Monday, and they sort of, kind of left the door open for exactly how they'll use him. He'll obviously be in the bullpen, and Dombrowski said they're assuming for the remainder of the year, but he also said that doesn't mean they can't change their mind and start to lengthen him out. I think it really depends on what they end up doing at the trade deadline, if they end up doing anything. You know, it feels like they have to do something, but I think it kind of... maybe they end up going out of the trade deadline and acquiring a closer and moving Eovaldi back into the rotation. Maybe they go out of the trade deadline and get a rental starter, and so they keep Eovaldi in the bullpen for now for the remainder of the season, just to kind of keep him out there. So I think a lot of it kind of hinges on the next couple weeks, but he's supposed to be, you know, they've given him a timetable of being back for, you know, if not that first series after the All-Star break, then, you know, that first week after the All-Star break. So it's coming sooner than later.
Jen, last year was a historical season for the Sox. We get it. They won an exorbitant amount of games, won the World Series. But when you look at this team now and you see the issues that they're having and you see that there is, they need to make some moves. The bullpen really is a mess, depending on what, even with Eovaldi going in, even if he's successful, bridging the gap to him is going to be a struggle for them. When you look at the farm system for the Red Sox, there's got to be some concern that there isn't a whole lot there anymore to be able to go get the guys that they need to get. Is there some concern in the Red Sox front office and with the fan base that when this little run that the Red Sox are having is gone, that there's not going to be a lot on the farm and this team could be going the wrong direction?
Yeah, you know, I think definitely, you know, they realize, and Dombrowski's spoken candidly, that they know they have a thin farm system. I mean, if you look at those farm system ranking systems from Baseball America or MLB.com, they're always, you know, in the past few years, they've been last. That was when they were up near the top, when they had guys like Benintendi and Devers, Betts and Bogarts coming up, and all those guys now are here. So, you know, farm systems go through ebbs and flows, and obviously this is definitely a downturn. One, because they've traded away a lot of these guys for in the Kimbrel deal and in the Sale deal, but also two, they've graduated a lot of those prospects to the majors right now. I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons for that, but at the same time, yeah, I mean, rebuilding the farm system has sort of, I wouldn't say shifted into a priority, but they know they need to get it done, and it's something that's, you know, important because of these situations where they need to be able to trade for a guy, you know, in season if they failed to sign somebody in the offseason.
You mentioned Devers there as one of those guys that's come up recently, and he was a part of last year's team, clearly. And this year, though, I mean, he's got to be one of the few bright spots, at least offensively. Is he tracking ahead of where they want him to at this point, or is this sort of what they expected all along?
I think this is what they expected all along. You know, I know people were very frustrated with him and kind of his lack of progress the past couple years. But the Red Sox, you know, kept saying, be patient. He's really good. He's what we want him to, you know, we know he can be a star player, and we know, you know, he can be this kind of all-star caliber guy. Obviously, he didn't make it this year, and they're pretty disappointed about that. But, yeah, I think that they're kind of this. They're reaping the benefits of kind of sticking with him, and you know, not trading him in one of those deals over the past couple of years where it sounded like teams were interested in him. So, you know, I think they had the foresight in this sense, at least, to kind of stick with a guy that they saw promising, and they're benefiting from it now because, yeah, like you said, him and Bogarts really are the two guys carrying this team right now, and if you kind of rewind, you know, 3 years or so, or even a couple years, and said that, you know, you'd be laughed at. Those two guys were kind of, you know, on the fringe, and fans are frustrated with their performances and kept wanting to see more out of them, and now we're seeing that.
And that's offensively, but in the field, I mean, he's still leading the team in errors. Is that how concerning is that for you know, the team as it tries to, you know, develop him as a talent and, you know, try to chase down the Yankees here?
Yeah, I mean, it's concerning when you look at the numbers. I think, again, that's another area that's still a work in progress. But this year, if you kind of see him day in and day out, his defense, regardless of the errors, just the plays he's making, is light years better than it has been in the past 2 years. The range that he's been able to make, the throws that he makes, he makes more errors on the easy plays than he does on the difficult plays. So I think, you know, it comes in time, I guess, that guys kind of develop as they do in terms of, you know, some guys come up sharp defensively and some guys come up sharp offensively and some guys kind of have to, you know, figure it out along the way. The same, if you were kind of comparing him to Bogarts, Bogarts was the same way. You know, had a ton of errors in his, you know, in the beginning of his career. He still makes them, but he's definitely become a much better defensive shortstop. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, being patient. And I think that they value what he provides offensively so much that they'll live with the errors and continue to work with him, you know, every day ahead of games in terms of just making the plays, planting the feet, you know, giving him, you know, suggestions of how to range and where to be on certain players and things like that.
We're talking to the Athletics Red Sox insider Jen McCaffrey here on 101.3 The Game Sports Saturday with Jeff and Austin. Jen, the London trip, first time in the history of baseball, you know, the Yankees and Red Sox go over there and it looked like 60,000 people went to each game. Was it a success in the Red Sox eyes?
I think it was, you know, I think it was in baseball and, you know, from an MLB perspective as well. And, you know, those games seemed to draw really well. You know, the atmosphere seemed really good from their perspective. I think just the logistical craziness of it was a lot. You know, I was talking to someone with the Red Sox front office the other day and just saying that in the future, maybe they can figure out to do something like a 4 or 5 game trip or something along those lines, because 2 games was just like, by the time you got there, you're turning around. And obviously they had great, you know, accommodations and fancy flights and all that, but just, it's just so much travel to get there. And then there's so much, you know, pomp and circumstance, and then you turn around and leave. So, you know, next year, obviously the Cubs and Cardinals are going. We'll see kind of what MLB has learned from, you know, the Red Sox Yankees series this year and what they do next year to kind of improve anything on that series. But I think overall it was viewed as a success. But of course, anything, you know, you do on that magnitude, on that level, there's always things that can be improved.
Was there any talk about the mound or the air? I mean, the runs scored in those 2 games were crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's been so much talk in baseball about, you know, the baseballs this year and how different they are, and the stitching and the seams and just the way that they're created. I was reading something about the baseballs that they brought over to London were an even different version, and that maybe contributed. Of course, it was extremely humid there, and people were talking about the playing surface being really fast. So, yeah, I mean, there's probably a variety of factors. I'm not sure if they'll look into any of that next year in terms of trying to adjust anything to make it more of a truer brand of baseball as opposed to kind of just a slugfest on all ends. But yeah, that was definitely something that was, you know, a topic of discussion.
I don't know if anybody would have put any money on Rick Porcello and Tanaka not making it through the first inning of the first game.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it's crazy.
That was wild to see. And just the length of those games, of course, is, you know, you always get long Red Sox Yankees games, but the pitching was just wild to see the offensive numbers that we're able to put up.
Jen, we only have a couple minutes left, but what do the Red Sox have to do to make a push? I think they're 12 out on the loss side on the Yankees, which is, you know, look, you'd like to win the division, but you get all that. And there's nothing to say they couldn't come back and win this, but to get a solid wild card and maybe get that first wild card, what do the Sox have to do in the second half to get this done?
I really think they need a pitcher. You know, they need a couple pitchers. They need someone in the bullpen. They need a starter if they're going to keep Eovaldi, you know, in the bullpen, and there's going to be a hole there. They can't keep throwing out, a random, you know, reliever every fifth day. That's going to be solidified. So there's things that need to be done. You know, like you were saying, I'm not sure that the farm system is strong enough to be able to pull all of that off. Maybe they will. But they need at least a pitcher. 2 would be better, probably even 3 would be helpful, but that's kind of a long shot, to be able to kind of just compete down the stretch and make sure that they get one of those wild card spots. Because like you were saying, I don't think the division is necessarily in sight right now, but the wild card, you're about 2 games out at this point. So that's, you know, against teams that you can compete against. So that's something that they'll be focusing on down the stretch.
Jen McCaffrey, you're the best. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again down the road.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right. The Athletics, Jen McCaffrey, Red Sox insider. You're a Sox fan.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I ask you this question. When Dombrowski left the Detroit Tigers, you know, he left the farm system barren. Now, they had some great years. They were close to a couple world championships. My brother-in-law and his buddy Matt have been at my house for a week, and they're huge. They're from Detroit, so they're big Tigers fans, and they talked about what Dombrowski, we were just talking about it this week.
Yeah.
You know, when Dombrowski came, and he's looked at as a genius, a baseball genius in terms of organizations and trying to win championships. But again, I he left Detroit in a bad way. He goes to Boston, who had arguably the best farm system in baseball. And I get that all those guys, most of those guys are now on the team.
Right.
But when you look at this team going forward, you got a question with Mookie Betts, whether he wants to be in Boston or not, if they're going to put that kind of money on the table to keep him. You know, there's questions there. You've got an aging rotation, a guy in Chris Sale that they put a lot of money into, and now he's showed signs that he's getting either a little older, maybe he's not healthy. Mm-hmm. There's got to be real concerns for the future of the Red Sox.
Yeah, it's funny how those naysayers about Dombrowski, like, it's starting to look a lot like they're, you know, like they were right. It's not concert. Like, it's not, it doesn't warm your heart. That's for sure.
But I guess my question is it worth it if you win a championship?
Yes.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
So I agree.
Like,
I agree
last
with
year
you.
Was fun.
Right. So winning that championship kind of says, you know what, if we're bad for say 5 or 6 years now after, I mean, they're not going to be bad for a while, but
right.
I mean, you got a lot of young talent there, but if things still fall forward, if you win a championship, it's worth it.
Yeah. And it, like, so she was talking, Jen was talking about the, that 17-13 slugfest in London. I looked that up. That was 4 hours and what are we talking here? It was like 4:40 something. I was like, oh, that's long. But that wasn't as long as that 18-inning game in the World Series.
Yeah,
I looked back at that. That thing was 7:20 and that was fantastic.
Yeah. And like, and you think it's a big deal time. This is what it gets me about people that freak out about baseball. But if you like baseball and you're watching it, like, what does it matter if you like it? You know what I'm saying? That's the stuff that gets me about this.
I know it gets to you. I like when the norm is trending from 3 to 4 hours. That's too much for like every day.
But if you're watching a 4.5 hour game and they're compelling games,
yeah.
I mean, are you really thinking, oh my God, I've been watching for 4 hours? I mean, if it's a compelling game and it's back and forth and it's interesting, and I mean, the 17-13 game, that game was like nip and tuck. It was like watching a video game. It was entertaining.
Right.
You know, I mean, or if you're watching a game that's 2 hours and it's a pitcher's duel, I mean, isn't it, you're watching a baseball game, and if it's compelling, isn't it just compelling?
Yes.
Whether it's 6 hours or...
Yes.
You talked about the World Series game that went, you know, the 18-inning game. That was one of the most compelling games the Sox had all season, right?
One of the more compelling games all time. 3-2 into the 18th.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, some people would argue, and I don't watch enough baseball to be one of these people, but some people would argue that the reason they're not compelling enough is that if they're regular season games, they don't mean that much since there's 182 of the 162.
162.
I mixed it with the NBA.
I got 82 you. Yeah, because they play 182 games in the NBA, right?
No, they play 82 games in the NBA. They play 162 in the
baseball.
MLB.
Good
That's
job.
A lot of regular season games.
It is, but if you, and this is my argument, like, I'm not a hockey guy, and I know we got to take a break here so you can start playing the music again, but I'm not a hockey guy, so I'm not into watching hockey games. But I know I got plenty of friends that are huge hockey guys that are in the regular, that are into it. If you're watching the game, and you're into it, you're watching, it's compelling to you.
Yeah.
That to me, that's what I'm saying. Like, each game, you know, the NFL is not Major League Baseball. The NBA is not the NFL. The NFL is not the NHL. The NHL is not MLS. You know what I mean? Like, they're all their own entities. Let them be what they're going to be. And if you put a good product out, they're going to watch it. It's just as simple as that. That's why I hate when people try to fix these. Baseball and all these sports have been going on for hundreds of years. Just let them be what they're going to be. Am I getting too? Is that too old school for you?
It's deja vu from last week.
Well, it just drives me nuts. Just drives me nuts. All right, take a quick break when we come back. Cool story about Anthony Lim. I want to talk about this. And Alex wrote about it. We'll talk about that next.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
We are back here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. I'm your host, Jeff Paul. Austin Danforth hanging with me today. It's good to have you 2 days in a row, 2 weeks in a row.
I know. And we'll go for the trifecta next week.
That's called a winning streak. Aaron Wells, welcome back, buddy, from your vacay. It was good to see you, too.
Thank you very much.
Interesting first couple segments here. We got some NBA talk, which is obviously hot and heavy here. We've got a bunch of texts here. We mentioned the Twitter question, the Green City Garage poll question. You can go to 101.3 The Game on Twitter. Is a disastrous offseason experienced by the Knicks bad luck, or is it just the real culture problem that's going on in New York? We got Todd text us and said, Dolan is the absolute problem with the Knicks. He banned Charles Oakley from games for crying out loud. He's a joke. Players know it and don't want to play for him. Todd also mentioned that, Jay just mentioned that Todd mentioned earlier, another earlier text, that he thinks the Celtics are one of the favorites. He did not mention the Indiana Pacers. Jay thinks that he's a Celtic fan. He thinks the Pacers are should be the favorite to win the East. They had a couple big signings. Malcolm Brogdon, my man.
Oh, yeah,
UVA,
your boy.
Yeah, signed a big contract with them. So, interesting story. The NBA is definitely an interesting story. We're going to definitely get to that. Last night, if you're just waking up and tuning in, Kawhi Leonard signs with the Clippers. Paul George gets traded by Oklahoma City to go to the Clippers as well for 5 first-round picks. It's just a huge trade in the NBA, and it seems like all the pieces have fallen now in terms of the big names, the superstars that I think a lot of teams were hoping for. They've kind of all gone where they're going to go, so we're kind of set and ready to go this season in the NBA. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, the story I was reading earlier this week talking about this free agency period and how it's sort of, you know, the sweepstakes everyone could sort of see coming, and that, you know, next year is nowhere near, and the year after that really isn't going to be anywhere as close to this. So, like, this was the chance that, you know, that teams had to sort of mix it up and get lucky or unlucky, as maybe Knicks fans feel.
Yeah.
But what it's done is it spread out a lot of this talent into different places. You could rattle off, you know, 7 or 8 teams that have legit high caliber guys that might think they have a chance to make some noise in the playoffs next year.
Well, we're definitely going to talk about that. I've got a segment dedicated to that next about the NBA. Mike Greenberg of ESPN had a really interesting take, and we'll talk about that next hour. But, you know, the team that I'm excited to see now that no one seems to be talking about is the New Orleans Pelicans. I mean, I'm intrigued to see what they have now. You know, they made the big trade with the Lakers. They basically, you know, fleeced the Lakers from draft picks and all this young talent. They have Zion Williamson. J.J. Redick just signs. It actually is like Duke South now, if you look at the amount of Dukies that are on New Orleans. But it's going to see, that's the type of team that I'm kind of excited to see, a team that's kind of building from the bottom up with a lot of resources. There's got to be a lot of excitement there. And you got arguably the best player coming in out of the draft in Zion Williamson. That, to me, is going to be more of a compelling story to me than, say, the Clippers and the Lakers and the other super teams that we have around the NBA.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you get a guy in Zion who is probably the most likable slash liked player of that caliber to come into the league in a long time. Like, he's a spectacle in his own right. And now you're curious, how is this guy going to pan out, you know, against the big boys, the best in the world? And that's really, as you said, compelling.
It is. And their future's bright. And they brought in some players from the Lakers that can play. I mean, they brought in some real stars from the Lakers, some young kids that I think before LeBron got there, they felt that this was going to be the bedrock of the Lakers' future. And now they're going to be with New Orleans. It's going to be fun to see.
Well, unless Brandon Ingram develops the way he was supposed to beforehand and Zion blows up right away, they might not be good this year, but they're building the way MLB teams have been building for the last few years, where it's compiling picks, compiling future assets, and doing the opposite of what a lot of these teams are doing, where the other teams are building for the next 3 years. This team looks like they're building for the next 10 to 15. And if Brandon Ingram does develop the way he was supposed to, which a lot of people think might have been stopped because LeBron showed up and took away some minutes and took away some leadership opportunities. If he does, that guy's going to be really good because he's 6'9", he can shoot, he can drive, he can handle. And then you've got Zion, who is the biggest player in the NBA by weight and going to be potentially a dominant force.
Well, I think that's what I mean. They're a compelling story. I don't know if they're going to win. I mean, but I think it's to see what they're doing down there. That's the kind of story I'm liking to see, because it's not like everybody's, Anthony Davis was forcing his way out of New Orleans, and it looked like New Orleans, oh, this is going to be the worst place to be. And I remember tweeting out when it turned out that New Orleans had the number one pick, that Zion might go back to college to try this again next year, you know. But I mean, I think in the long run, I think that organization is, if they go with what they're doing, it's compelling to see what they could become. And I don't think that's going to take a long time to be successful.
No, it might not. And I think the X factor is Zion, seeing how his game translates. And then, you go from there.
Yeah. And again, real quick on the Celtics, I think the Celtics have done really well here. I mean, I think this is exactly where, if you're a Celtic fan, you should wake up this morning and feel good about where the Celtics are. When Danny Ainge does it this way, and on all the quote unquote, you know, people that know what they're talking about, the experts tell you you're doing it wrong, that's when the Celtics thrive. And I think they're going to thrive this year.
Yeah. All my friends I've talked to that are big Celtics fans, like, they really like the okay, we'll swap. We'll get rid of Kyrie.
Yeah.
We'll take Kemba, and we'll be very happy with
it. I think the Horford thing's a loss, and we all get Horford, Al Horford meant to that team. He's a great player, and you can't discount losing him. But I think bringing in Cantor, I think this is a good team. I love what they've done, and they're very coachable. And you're going to see Brad Stevens thrive this year. I promise you that.
And speaking of X factors, if Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown pick up where they left off when they were getting starters minutes all the time, that's going to be insane. Oh, that's what
I
mean.
I think you're going to see a really good basketball. I think you're going to see a team that's going to contend. I really do. A team that went in this year that was supposed to win, the Super Celtics. I mean, that was, how could they lose? How could this not work out for them? Now you're going to be a team that nobody really wants to talk about, and that's perfect if you're Danny Ainge.
Yep.
A couple weeks ago, you were out. Alex Abrami was in here. We talked a lot about college basketball and you know that NCAA rule that we have that has athletes have the ability to kind of test the waters.
Right.
And we talked about Anthony Lamb, that he announced he was going to leave early to test, and he ended up coming back, which is great for Vermont, and we're looking forward to an awesome season with him. And we're going to talk about this awesome story that I read yesterday about him. But Alex wrote a great article about Anthony Lamb's experience going through this NBA process. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so he caught up with Anthony and the Catamounts. I think it was last week when they were, you know, back on campus for summer workouts and sessions, and picked his brain about when you do that, what are you taking away? What sort of feedback are you getting? Why would you what's the thought process going into that, other than you can glean some information? And Anthony, being the insightful and thoughtful kid that he is, gave Alex some really good responses. And, you know, it basically, the feedback he was hearing is all things that, you know, when you watch him at UVM, like, oh, he's just great. Just get in the ball, do all these things. That's not necessarily what they need to see at the next level, where he's hearing it's about more what he can do off the ball and ways he can stay in the game mentally. And those sort of under the radar, super nerdy basketball things that you don't notice a star do, but if he does them really well, and when you think about what the Catamounts have coming back, could pay dividends for the Catamounts this year. So it, you know, whatever unease that, you know, the Catamount fans or the coaches may have had, what if he does go? Then this is a lot different team. I think ultimately there wasn't too much of a danger of that, and it sounds like everybody's going to benefit.
And I wonder why guys, you know, and I'm going to use a name here, and I don't, you know, I'm sure people know who he is now because Virginia won the national championship, and I'm not trying to be the homer here because I'm a Cavalier guy, but Kyle Guy, the sharpshooter for Virginia, had some of the biggest shots of the tournament. We all know who he is. You know, he decides, he did the same thing Anthony Lamb did. He came out along with Ty Jerome, DeAndre Hunter, who was picked fifth overall, and Mamadi Diakite, who had a huge tournament, who I couldn't believe was leaving, but he's coming back to Virginia. He went in, he kind of did what Anthony Lamb did. But Kyle, the guy, decided, Ty Jerome was drafted in the top, I think he was 21st or 22nd pick, so I can see why he'd leave. But Kyle Guy, you know, he wasn't on anybody's draft board. He ends up getting drafted. I think he was the 55th pick. I mean, excuse me if I'm not 100%.
Second rounder.
With Sacramento. And you think to yourself, if you stay one more year and you come out and you have another big year, which you would have, you know, at Virginia, you'd be competing for a national championship again. You'd be the cover boy in terms of, you know, you'd be on television a lot. People would be interested in you. You'd have a lot, you know, you'd be the guy they'd be looking at. You could probably you could play yourself into, say, a top 15, maybe a top 20 pick. What would make you leave with the chance that you may not get drafted at all and not have an opportunity to come back? And then what are you doing? You're playing in Europe. You're leaving the. I mean, if the whole goal is to get the big contract in the NBA and playing them, now it's worked out for him. He got drafted, and we'll see where it goes. But I always wondered what would be the draw for me not to go back to college if I knew that one more year of college would really better my draft status. And that's why I was interested to see what Anthony would say, because. I mean, first of all, I think it's incredibly exciting that Anthony Lamb could be drafted in an NBA draft maybe next year. I mean, that is just, I can't imagine the feeling going to the University of Vermont and having that opportunity.
And going into this offseason, it would have been freakish for him to say, yep, I'm going to leave and then actually get drafted. Like, that would have been shocking. No disrespect to Anthony Lamb because he's a phenomenal player. But, you know, knowing the conference he plays in and the school he plays at, you look at him and expect, he needs to get at least another year to wow and impress people.
And obviously they come here to play basketball and to win here, and that's a big
deal. To school.
But what, they're going to school for their future. So you think, hey man, you know, I'm going to play another full year here and be a better player and hone my game up, so I give myself the best chance to fulfill my dream and to fill the job I want when I leave. So you just wonder why someone would make a decision if you had that chance to stay a little longer to improve your status, you know, why you would go.
And this is where not following the NBA super closely, I am a little out of my depth because I Kyle Guy, your guy,
yeah.
Guy. he may have gotten some feedback looking at the draft and the players available, and a team might have really liked him as their second rounder. And okay,
sure.
Then you get that sort of information. Okay, yeah, we're going to take you. You know you're going to get taken. Go for it.
Yeah, I guess. And you might get look hurt. It's true. It's true.
You could get hurt. Being a shooter, what if he goes into a slump? He's less attractive next year.
Right.
He might have thought and gotten guidance that, you know, as far as his draft ability, this is a pretty good apex to hit. And yes, maybe he could go higher, but as you see with college football players, a lot of times, if they stay that extra year, even if they don't get hurt, you're just nitpicked and worked over and looked and just examined and scrutinized to death. It quite often doesn't help their draft stock.
And I'm not saying, and I know, I mean, this is out of my pay grade. I have no idea what they're telling these kids, and I have no idea what the process is, and maybe it was the right move for him. But I just look at it as, here's another chance for a guy to become maybe a top 50, a guy that gets drafted 55, 56. Maybe you stay one more year and you're successful, and now you're drafted 15th or 20th. That's a difference in pay grade as well. That's a difference in where you think you're going to make the team as well. I mean, there's a chance that he may end up being buried on a bench someplace and not being able to get on the floor. You know what I'm saying? So it's just interesting. The whole process interests me. It just really does.
But you got to like Kyle Guy's stock as a shooter.
Of course.
In a league that's increasingly reliant on just pure shooting.
And you mentioned earlier, there's not a better time to come out than on top. I mean, when you win a national championship and you get all that fanfare and people know who you are, there's not a better time. And if you follow him, and I am a little bit on his summer league, he's had a great summer league the first few games he's played. So maybe it's the right decision for him.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, I just think that stuff's interesting. And the fact that we could be looking forward to a draft, and again, you don't want to go crazy here, but for Anthony Lamb, a kid from that plays University of Vermont to get drafted, says so much. Again, we talk about every week, and I feel like I'm a revolving ship on this, but it says so much about the program, what's happening at Vermont, that there's a potential this guy could get drafted in the NBA.
And if you look at, you know, what's coming up next year with this guy, Daniel Giddens, the transfer from Alabama, 6'11", athletic, former, you know, blue chip recruit, have Anthony Lamb playing against him every day in practice and him playing against Anthony Lamb every day. If you want to talk about crazy stuff, maybe there's a couple draft picks in the mix there.
Oh, that could be unbelievable. All right, quick break. When we come back, it's out in left field time. And it's not out in left field that we could have a couple draft picks from Vermont either. I'm just going to say that right now. That's not the story. We'll be right back.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is out in left field on 101.3 The Game.
To be completely transparent, I didn't know what this story was until I just looked at this piece of paper, so I'll just let you go with it, because I already hate this story.
I that's why I picked it. Okay. Snake girl snuggles up to pet pythons while watching cartoons. Would you be calm if you had six snakes crawling all over you?
No.
This tot, named Maharani, loves to watch cartoons with her extremely unusual companions. Her hometown of Tangerang, Indonesia, does not require a license to have the slithery creatures as pets.
Yeah, I mean, I can just tell right now that is just not, that's not good parenting.
Licensing wouldn't make me more apt to have them be open to them as pets anyway.
I don't get the snake phenomenon that people want them as pets. Like, no. There's not, they don't like you. They're trying to size you up. I mean, every time they look at you, they're figuring out a way they can get you in their mouth. That's basically what this is all about. I mean, they are. I mean, I know they're important to the ecosystem, and I'll get all that stuff, but to put your child with a bunch of pythons, that's, you're just asking for it. That's sickening.
Like, some of the really small, skinny ones, I don't think they're really a threat because they recognize that they can't eat humans. So, like, as pets, they don't really.
Yeah, but they grow up. They grow up.
Well, no, the ones that stay little. The ones that stay little. Some people have, like, these little pet, like, little snakes as pets.
Oh, they do. Everybody I know has, like, they have pythons and boa constrictors. That's,
and in this story, I saw the video. They're, like, giant snakes. Yeah. Six of them all over her.
Jeff, what's your take on anacondas?
I'm not a big fan of those
either. Because those are big enough to eat you.
So is a python. And listen, there are stories I read all the time in Indonesia where these people are working in the fields and they don't come home and they find the snake going around with the big bulbs and the people are in them. Like, this is real stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just, I hear all these stories of, you know, people that have snakes as pets and they get out of the cage and they wake up one morning and the snake's, like, you know, around their leg or, you know, it's crazy.
I don't like flushing, like say you kill a bug or a spider or something. Right. I don't just like throw that in the toilet and don't flush it. You flush it right away and you make sure that thing goes away.
And who's flushing a bowl constrictor down the toilet anyway?
No, but like you let them out and like you never know where they'd pop up.
Well, I'll tell you one story. My good friend, I won't say his name here, but had a boa constrictor for a long time. It was a python, one of those, boa constrictor python, and it got huge. His name was Jose. And Jose passed away one day, and he decided to put Jose in a garbage bag and put him in the garbage. Can you imagine if you're the garbage man and, you know, you're throwing, you know, the garbage away and you know, Jose comes out? Oh, my God.
Or just like you pick it up and that the weight.
Yeah, exactly.
In the
music. Oh, my God.
Is that a body?
So,
oh, my God.
We can transition from snakes to vacations.
Fine.
Do you and Mrs. Paul have any desires about taking like a long trip to the other side of the world, like New Zealand or Australia?
Of course.
Have you ever talked about that?
We have.
Which one are you guys leaning towards?
Australia would be my spot.
You wouldn't.
I know I don't like the snakes of Australia, but I would love to visit Australia.
So just everything in Australia can kill you.
Really?
And nothing in New Zealand will kill you.
But what if I stay like in the big cities in Australia?
Snakes are everywhere. Spiders, yeah. Like 9 of the 10 most deadly snakes in the world are in Australia.
Do you hear that, Monica? I guess we're not going to Australia.
I've heard people in Sydney talk about like they're in Sydney, like the biggest city in Australia, and they're still seeing like big snakes, big spiders.
I guess my biggest fear about all that stuff is like you hear those stories of where people like sit down in the toilet.
Yeah.
And there's you know.
Yeah, no, that's no. So
oh,
just think about that.
Okay.
New Zealand. There's no mammals that can kill you or maim you.
Okay.
There's no poisonous anything. You're good to go.
Mental note taken. All right, Aaron, sports update time. Thanks, Austin. I appreciate that. Monica, I hope you were listening.
Getting you ready for game day. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Anytime someone talks about snakes, it takes me completely out of my game. Like, I mean it. Like, they paralyze me. There was a grass snake in my backyard on the 4th of July, and we were trying to get some out of a shed.
You're just shook.
I just stop. It's like I'm afraid to. I don't know why either. As a kid, I wasn't afraid of them. I don't know what. It's just maybe they just get a bad rap in the media or something. I'm afraid of them.
I don't think they get a bad rep. They're unsettling. They don't have legs.
Yeah.
They shed their skin.
That's
they have
not fun.
Fangs.
Yes. They eat people.
They can eat people.
Right.
They can kill people.
Yes. They're not fun. They're
they don't
not
have
good.
Legs.
Again.
So their movement is literally slithering.
Yeah. It's not fun. They're not fun.
You're going to be okay. You need to sit a segment out.
No, I'm all good.
Also do we need to get you some hot cocoa?
No. It's 90 degrees all week. How about this way? It's been awesome.
It has been.
I love summer weather like that. Hey, before we get into more, I want to talk about our good friends of Vermont Engine Service Incorporated. They've been in business since 1985. That's something in itself that you can say you've been in business that long. Says something about this business. They're located at 16 Krupp Drive in Williston, 802-863-2326. You can visit them at www.vermontengine.com or on Facebook. They have a Facebook page as well, which is awesome. Their hours of operation are 7:30 to 5, Monday through Friday, and they're open Saturdays from 8 to noon. They're an engine machine shop. They do engine rebuilding. They boring and honing of cylinders, crankshaft grinding, head rebuilding, engine balancing, turn brake drums and rotors, and they flywheel resurface. They sell mowers. They sell Dixie Chopper and Grasshopper zero-turn mowers. And they've got great deals on holdover Dixie Choppers. Check them out at Vermont Engine Service Incorporated. See our buddies over there, 802-863-2326. And welcome to the Sports Saturday family. We're so excited to have you. It's been quite a show so far. A lot of news overnight. We got the NBA stuff, talk some baseball about the Red Sox. Had a nice snake story, which is always fun. I got to ask you this question, though. Last night on Twitter, I got in this thing with this guy that he had tweeted something that mocking Notre Dame's relevancy in college football.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he made the point to say they haven't won since 88 and they keep getting blown out in big games. And my argument to him was that with the way college football is constructed, where there's one of two teams seem to win every year, I would say Notre Dame is very relevant considering they're not a winner. So I guess that kind of brought up the question and maybe we're way out of season for that. But to me, when I thought about this, what college football is, you know, we just came off a great NCAA tournament. We're talking about parity in the NBA and mm-hmm. baseball. We talk about all that stuff with all the major sports. College football is a huge entity. And really what we have is we've got maybe three teams. I guess you could maybe lump Georgia in there because they've been fairly competitive, you know, between the big three, Clemson, Alabama, and I guess you could put Georgia in there. But I think you have to look at a team like Notre Dame,
Ohio State.
maybe Michigan, even though they haven't won, they're still relevant in a world where only two or three teams really have an opportunity to win every year.
Yeah, it's you.
When the, I say the, yeah,
right. I know what you're saying. Like
the, relevancy isn't about championships in college football.
Right.
It can't
be. Do people talk about you?
Right.
Yeah.
And it, because you don't have a great chance to win in college football unless you're Alabama or Clemson. I mean, it really comes down to that. And maybe Georgia.
And Ohio State.
Maybe put Ohio State in there, those four teams.
And you're getting into like structural things too, where it's like there's always going to be one team from the SEC in that championship game, right, just because it's the SEC.
Right.
And lately that team's been Alabama because what Nick Saban has done there is incredible. And mm-hmm. he just stockpiles right. talent and they yep. develop it. And it's a machine that runs itself to some degree. And then you look at Clemson and the ACC. Dabo Swinney's built an incredible program yep. in a weak conference, so they can just like once you get to that level and it can sustain itself, they don't deal with anywhere near the same competition in the ACC that you'll find in the Big Ten or the SEC.
Right.
So you're always going to see probably at this point one of those two teams.
And my question is the structure the problem with the NCAA and not so much a problem with the specific teams that aren't as relevant because they're not winning anything? Is the problem that, like, for example, in the NCAA tournament in basketball, the top 64 teams are all relevant for a month and a half. And then all of a sudden, well, not all of them, the ones that go out
they're relevant
are not,
for a week.
But they're very relevant at the end. Everyone has a chance. And then in NCAA football, only really four teams have a chance. And if you're not one of the really big schools at the top, then people who aren't directly in your region aren't necessarily as interested because they don't see you as a real contender. Is that the problem?
Yeah, let me just throw the number out in case anybody wants to get in on this. 802-655-6672 if you want to call us today or join us on the text line, 802-655-6672. Both numbers work for the Town Fair Tire text line and our number. And I think what we have to do here, is this is what I've been saying for a long time, is if we had a bigger tournament for college football, and I'm talking, I would like to see a 16-team tournament, I think you would see some really compelling stuff. Because the reality here is, for a lot of teams, if you struggle out of the gate, If Notre Dame comes out of the gate and loses two games or loses a game, they're probably out of it until later on. Now, the thing that Notre Dame has that no other team does have, though, is they play in an independent. They're an independent, so they play a lot of good teams.
Right.
So Notre Dame doesn't have a lot of cupcakes in their schedule. I know people will say, "What are you talking about? They play Navy," but they'll throw a couple names here and there. Sometimes yearly they're not very good, but usually the teams they play are power conference teams or power teams.
Yeah.
They're bowl eligible teams. When you look at a team, say like Georgia, Auburn, throw a couple schools out like that, Ohio State, a Michigan. You lose to a Wisconsin. You lose to Iowa. You lose to a Maryland. You're out.
Right.
What I mean? So if you were to open this up to 16 teams and make these Alabamas and these Clemsons have to beat a few really good teams in a row to get to a championship, I think you'd find something that's incredibly compelling that I think the whole world would love to watch.
And I agree there. The structural thing I think I was getting at and that Aaron got even closer mm-hmm. to. So you start the season, there's maybe 20 teams that if they would be potential to win out or have one loss and be in that mix at the end of the season. The problem with the way the sport has been set up forever is if you are one of those 20 teams and you lose two games, nope, you're done.
Right.
But like you lose one game, we might not make it. You lose a second, we're done. So right. like you're just done. If you're outside of those 20 teams, the way that the rankings are set up with what used to be the BCS and now the rankings they have now, if you're outside of that, you're already starting at a disadvantage. You almost can't make up that ground to get the rankings where they need to be, where you can be in that discussion. I think we've seen that with UCF the last couple of years because they're disrespected on their face. They are never able to climb into that spot because they're not a Power 5 conference.
And you're also looking at, say a school like a Michigan State or an LSU. You go to a bowl against a UCF, and you're going to play on a roster that's ready to compete against you because they want to prove. And then you might be looking at a roster like a Michigan State or an LSU. You might have two guys that want to go pro and are going to sit out that game because it doesn't mean anything to them.
Right. So it happened to Michigan this year.
Exactly. It happened to Michigan a couple times. You're going to see it more often because you saw what happened with the linebacker at Notre Dame that's now with Dallas. I'm trying to – a couple years ago – He had a big injury in a bowl game that really didn't mean anything. The middle linebacker right now for Dallas. I'll think of it in a minute. But
like you said, not football season.
not football season. But my point being is that if you were to brand this thing out, branch it out to a bigger tournament, then one or two lost teams can get in it, and it would mean more. I think you'd have better football. You'd have people that were more compelled to watch. Not that college football isn't a big deal in town, in city, but I mean, if you lose two or three games and you really can't win a national championship, like the buzz is gone. Right. I don't care who you are.
No, and the old boys club of college football says, no, but that's why the regular season matters, because every game matters, because you can't lose
any
of them.
That's fine, but you, I mean,
but it really doesn't, because once you lose two, you're done.
Exactly.
And the games after that really don't mean anything.
They mean nothing, especially for the power teams.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe for a team that's just trying to get into a bowl. Like, I would argue, like, I'll use a school like Maryland. If they lose two or three games or
which
four games
do.
A season, right. But those a bowl game is important to their recruiting. A team like Virginia, mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of teams out there that, you know, winning, getting to a bowl game, being successful is really, bringing home a trophy is really important to that fan base. But to the power schools, they're trying to win a championship. Like, if you lose two or three games, they mean nothing. I mean, they're sitting players out in these bowl games. These bowl games mean nothing like they used to.
Right.
And so that's why you open this thing up, and I don't know how you do it. And people argue with it. It's, you can't play that many football games a season. Then fine, end the season a week early. Have somehow do a 16-team tournament.
Ditch the conference championships.
Exactly.
Make it a 16-team tournament.
Think about that. Then you give a UCF a chance to win.
As a Michigan fan, I spend the entire season on pins and needles.
Sure.
Because I know if we lose one game before we play Ohio State, because we end the year with Ohio State every year,
yep.
And Ohio State is every year one of the top five teams in the world.
Yeah, they are.
If you lose any game before Ohio State, you have to beat Ohio State to have any chance of any glory.
Right.
And if you don't beat Ohio State, well, that good try this year.
Exactly. And it doesn't matter what bowl game you go, it means nothing.
Nope, it doesn't.
But it would mean something if you knew that, you know, you qualified for the 16-team tournament, you can still win a national championship.
Right.
It keeps everybody vested. It keeps everybody in. And what a story would be. Truth be told, the Big Ten championship, the ACC championship, the SEC championship, it means nothing.
It only means, if Alabama's lost a game, or whoever they're playing has lost a game, if they lose another, they're out of the Final Four.
Exactly. And that's when it's somewhat of a big story. But other than that, when Clemson plays Duke in an ACC championship game, it means absolutely nothing. It means nothing. And usually in thank goodness for Georgia, that's been a challenge a little bit in the SEC for Alabama. So you've had some pretty good battles there, but those games mean nothing. It's about winning a championship.
It's the equivalent of, have you ever seen like the NFC East conference or NFC East division champions, like t-shirts where why do they even make those?
Yeah.
It's the same thing to win your conference in the NCAA,
but in the NFL, you're getting to the playoffs. I mean, you're making the playoffs usually when you do that, and your seeding is high. So that's a little bit different than even that, I think, because in most cases, even the two teams that are in the championship may not have a chance to win a national championship.
Right. And you get,
at least you have a chance to go win a championship.
And they only exist because those games only exist because they make a pile of money for the conference.
You're exactly right.
Well, the t-shirt joke was because you only buy those shirts if you didn't get farther.
Right. That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Or you're like me and you're so excited you just buy them anyway. I don't even care. I do want to get this Anthony Lancer. I got to give our good buddy Jackson Evans. He's a broadcaster from Northeast Sports Network. He's a great kid, number one. He loves sports and he's really good at what he does. I'm a friend of his on Facebook. And he mentioned that MakingTheMadness.com came out with their top 100 players going into this season.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Lamb's number 30 on that list. I mean, that to me is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, number 30 out of 100 players, I mean, the expectation is very high on this kid. I mean, and I think it's the coolest. I just think for the program, and we just talked about Anthony, but I mean, it's pretty neat to think that a kid like that at this school, what he's done, he's being recognized and number 30 in the nation out of 100 guys.
That's an insane amount of respect for someone from the University of Vermont playing basketball.
Agreed.
That's it's, we haven't seen that in about 15 years.
Right.
Since Mr. Coppenrath.
Yeah, yeah.
That's refreshing because generally, same reason we don't get at-large bids in America East is the same reason we don't have players that, you know, are considered among the best in the country.
Right.
But, you know, thankfully, you know, Anthony Lamb has been a tremendous catamount, developed, been a good teammate, leader, all those things, performed on the big stage. And that's something that, you know, fans can really point to and be like, that's our guy.
And you look at what he's done on the big stage. You brought up the big, I mean, in the NCAA tournament, he has been spectacular. I mean, what he did against Florida State this season was, I thought, was amazing. It's a team in Florida State that was the biggest team, I think, in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Athletic, big, and Anthony Lamb played great against them. He played great against Purdue the year they had the opportunity to play against Purdue.
Yep.
I mean, he has shown on the big stage he can carry them when he needs to, and he can make plays against big-time talent. And with what's coming in this year, the returning players, the two transfers from Oklahoma State and Alabama that are coming in that are stars, along with this kid, I mean, you wonder if we are close, if everything falls right, and people get mad at me for saying this, but if we're close with this kind of roster, if things happen the way we expect them to happen, and these guys are who we think they are, that, I mean, not only could you be looking at an at-large with them, potentially, if they were to get somehow not win their conference championship, but, you know, maybe be in a seed situation where they could make a run at this.
Where they have a much more winnable game or two.
Yeah.
It's all within reach. Losing Ernie Duncan is a big loss.
It is.
There's a lot of intangibles. I mean, he's an all-time caliber guy.
Yeah.
But you look at who they bring back, which is everybody except Ernie Duncan and Sam Dingba. You bring in a guy 6'11" athletic. That's something that really a former blue chip, you know, 4 or 5 star recruit. That's something that nobody in America East is going to have. The Duncan DeMuth, the transfer from Oklahoma State, they expected him to not be able to play this year. It sounds like that's changed, and he's very close to being allowed to play.
So his appeal process is going through, and there's a chance that he could play.
We'll take another 6'8" guy who can do stuff and shoot it and all those things. And then you add those guys into the mix of returners. You got Lamb, Steph Smith, Benny Shungu, two more Duncans. The recruits they have coming in, there's this kid Aaron Deloney, a sort of undersized but athletic guard from Oregon, who if you look up his highlights, he's just shooting it and making it from everywhere. Like, if he can fill it up like that, like, just whoo.
I mean, I'm telling you, I mean, I, we're not far away from this team being, and I'm not going to sit here and say national championship caliber like Gonzaga, but it took some years for Gonzaga to develop themselves with everything that's happening with UVM, the new facilities, Becker staying, all these players coming in, all these transfers coming in. Look out. The chance is there. The opportunity is there. The question is, how long does UVM stay in the America East? I mean, if you continue to be this talented and you keep bringing these types of players, isn't there a time where you think...
No. Because it costs money to leave and they don't... it took long enough to get this arena and everything else that's going on there. They're not going to shell out 7-8 figures to get out of a conference. And then, not only that, if you get out of the conference, as BU did a couple years ago, you're not eligible for postseason play right away, necessarily.
It's true.
So it's a fanciful thing.
It's a conundrum, though, for them, to me, because if you're in a stronger conference and you play the way we expect them to play, and I think they can compete at a better conference, I really do. Are you diminishing your opportunities to potentially be really what you want to be?
But then the thing that people don't think about with those arguments is it's every other sport. It's not just basketball.
Gotcha.
It's competing in it's every other sport.
It's true.
Where if you go into the A-10 or you pick a CAA, and all of a sudden all your other sports are at the bottom now. They were pretty competitive. Soccer might compete in either of those conferences at a high level, but... It only gets tougher for everybody else.
That's very true. Interesting. It's a good thing to talk about. Maybe this Vermont team brings the American East to the level that we need it to be for Vermont to compete. Maybe their success breeds more talent to the other programs, and maybe the American East turns into the
rising tide lifts all boats sort of thing.
Well said. We'll be right back.
Sports Saturday is back on 101.3 The Game.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation. 802-655-6672. Or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line. Same phone number, 655-6672. Todd just texted us and said we were talking about college football and the playoff system. And, I got into it with a guy that said Notre Dame isn't relevant. And I felt that in the world of college football, the way it's set up now, I believe that because there's only two or three teams that can win every year, it seems, the Notre Dame is very relevant, mm-hmm. along with Ohio State and Michigan State and, the other teams that have somewhat of a chance to compete to that level. Todd says, and so we talked about, just to get people up to fresh here, we talked a little bit about, in my opinion, I'd love to see a 16-team tournament.
Yep.
Where you can get everybody in. And Todd just said, the NCAA already has a model for doing this with smaller schools. I'm a UNH alumni, and it's always compelling football when they get in the playoffs. It can work with smaller schools, which it does, and it would work with larger ones. Also, any system where a team can be undefeated and be shut out of playoffs is by definition ridiculous. I agree with him. He's talking about UCF, I'm assuming, never having an opportunity to play for a national championship because I'm guessing their schedule isn't strong enough compared to the power conferences that get in.
Yep.
and what a story it would be, and how compelling would it be, even if you seeded UCF 16.
And put them against Alabama.
Put them against Alabama, just to see it.
Yeah.
It would have been a lot of fun to see. It would have been a great story. How much fun would that be?
Especially since that team would have lost slinging 60-yard bombs the entire game. Well, like their offense was so compelling.
Well, in college football itself is compelling. They're all slinging it. There's very few wishbone offenses anymore that's just trying to run you down your throat.
But with the ones that are... That's what I love about college football and basketball, that there are still different ways to win.
Very true. And wouldn't it be neat to see a way for these teams to all get in? I mean, there is nothing better than the first week of the NCAA tournament. There's nothing better. We can't wait to see 16s play ones. You saw what happened 2 years ago with Virginia and who's that team that could be? I can't remember.
UMBC.
I forgot all about those guys.
How could you?
But you see a great story there that you saw history made by a program in UMBC that'll go down in the annals of history as the greatest upset in college basketball history. And you can't have that in college football because they don't allow it.
Right.
I mean, why not allow it? Why can't a team get in there? Why does it have to be a team that's undefeated the whole way through? Look at Alabama's schedule. I would argue that Alabama plays one of the cookiest schedules. If the SEC down, they get a free pass in. They got to win. They got to play one or two big games a year to get in. You brought up Clemson's schedule with the ACC. It's abysmal. It's not a great conference in football.
Right. Each of those teams will play one good to very good non-conference game. They'll play three absolute cupcakes. And then if the conference is what it is, they get to either float through or they might have two more tough games. But everybody, with the name being Clemson and Alabama.
Sure.
Like, oh, well, they're great. And it's not that they're not.
Sure, sure.
But, at least do something on merit and not on resume.
And make them have to win. Make you really have to do it to win a championship, right? I mean, look at, you talked about Clemson's schedule, number one. Like, last year, Florida State was terrible. So when you look at the ACC schedule for Clemson, you think, okay, who's the competition? Miami, Florida State.
Yeah.
Okay, when they're bad, maybe Virginia Tech. When they're bad... I mean, the conference is bad. Clemson's going to moonwalk through that.
Right.
I mean, they're going to be, that's going to be Cupcake City. Alabama, when the SEC's strong, okay, I'll give it to you. But right now, the last 4 or 5 years, the SEC hasn't been the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy for them. Wouldn't it be nice to see a league tournament that made an Alabama and a Clemson really earn it? Like, you got to go through some good teams to win a championship. Like we make the college basketball champion do.
Right.
You have epic moments in college basketball, things that you'll remember forever. You have huge upsets. You don't have that. Any four of those teams last year that were in the tournament, that were in the playoff, if any of them won, it wasn't going to be, oh my God, I can't believe Notre Dame beat Clemson. Oh my God. I mean, that wouldn't have been that big a shock. They're a big program.
I'm probably way out of season on this, but I can't think of a fantastic, iconic moment from any of those playoff semifinals.
There aren't any.
There have been a couple of good finals, but the Deshaun Watson one was tremendous.
Yep. There are good games. There's some good games, but nothing oh my God.
Oh, it's the big guys playing each other, and one of the big guys won, and okay, now we finally have a championship.
Exactly.
And
we can look forward to the rematch next year.
Yeah, unless you're a fan of one of those schools or just a diehard college football guy.
Yeah, I think college football needs it. I really do, and especially if you're a passive fan. You're a fan of Michigan. If Michigan has three losses after they play Ohio State.
I watch anything after that with apathy. Or just rooting for Alabama to lose.
Yeah. And as a Notre Dame football fan that I am, if Notre Dame loses two or three games, I'm like maybe checking the score on a Saturday, but I'm not, who cares? Oh, are they in the Tostitos,
You're not going to go out and buy chips and dip to be a part of it?
No, but that's the point. Like, you want some interest, it would be really neat to have a tournament. Let's go back to the NBA. Do you want to add something to this, kiddo?
Oh, I was going to say, people do make the argument that the bowl games still matter, but I think that's crap, that the bowl games were killed by the college football playoff system, and now the college football playoff system doesn't have the bowl games to support it.
Well, I mean, they have an opportunity here. There's so much talent around the country in every sport. Look at college basketball. We were talking about Vermont. There are schools like Vermont all over the country.
Yeah.
Every team that comes in has a chance. When that tournament, when those teams are listed, you have a chance to win a championship. Doesn't matter whether it's a high chance or a low chance. Everyone's got a shot. In college football, you don't have that. And if you're not a big-time college football fan, then your team is kind of out of it, then you're kind of passively watching it. You want to check into the big games.
You're just, okay, I'll tune in on Sundays then.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a chance to make a tournament, Even if you have three or four, you lose three games, but you have a chance to get in. You can play your way in.
Mm-hmm.
You can't wait to for Selection Sunday to see if I'm the top 16 to get in. That would be compelling. That'd be compelling. All right. Mike Greenberg this week. Talk a little bit about the NBA. Let's get this soundbite out there. I want to talk about this. Mike Greenberg, you know, Mike and Mike in the Morning fame back in the day. He's with ESPN now. He's got that show in the morning. I don't even know what it's called. Interesting take by Mike Greenberg. I want to talk about that.
Okay.
I hope that everyone who cares about sports recognizes what we have all just lived through. This past Sunday was, without room for debate, the most dramatic and impactful day of its sort in the history of American sports. Consider this. NBA free agents collected nearly $3 billion on the first day of free agency. That is three times more than the guaranteed NFL deals in the first day of their league year. In fact, since free agency began on Sunday, 12 different players have agreed to a $100 million guaranteed contract. That is four times as many as have ever been given out in NFL history. Tobias Harris will earn $180 million over the next 5 years. He's never made an All-Star team. Ben Simmons will make $170 million. He's never made a three-point shot. The NBA free agent frenzy completely dwarfed Major League Baseball's All-Star announcements. Did you know Major League Baseball released their All-Star teams on Sunday at the same time? Bad I had a feeling decision. You did not.
Okay.
An hour into free agency on Sunday, every one of the top...
All right. So what he's basically saying here is, you know, his argument here, and it's a long-winded thing, but is that he thought process was the way this was going was not good for the NBA, but the NBA right now is the top dog. What it's doing is great. And again, let me just start by saying this. I am straight up, like, if someone will pay it, you're worth it. I'm a straight capitalist. Like, if you have an opportunity to make the money, get your money. If someone wants to pay it to you, it's not up to me to tell you you're not worth it. If someone thinks you're worth it, you're worth it. This has nothing to do with money. All I care about, because this is me talking as a fan, is what the project, what we have now as a product in the NBA and why I have been frustrated with the NBA for so long. To me, this is a collusion league. This mm-hmm. isn't about have or have not. This isn't about big market, small market. We hear in baseball, in football, we hear mostly in baseball, small market teams can't be successful. The Yankees and the Red Sox and the Cubs and the Angels and the whoever else you deem as a big market, you know, are bad for baseball. But to me, it's baseball at least keeps its superstars. In the NBA, we've got five or six teams. We were just talking. There's like six or seven teams that can actually win a championship in the NBA. If you're not a part of those six or seven teams, and I think if you're not named the New Orleans Pelicans, what are you playing for? What if you're a fan base of that? What's exciting about that? I look at coaches in the NBA. What do they mean? There's no more Phil Jacksons out there. I mean, maybe Pop, you know, got Pop down in San Antonio because he's been there for so long.
Brad Stevens.
But even Brad Stevens ran into trouble this year with a superstar like Kyrie Irving because the players make more money and they have all the influence. Look what LeBron James is doing to the Lakers. So when you look at the NBA today, is it in a better place today than it was, say, I don't know, before free agency started? I mean, you've got all the superstar players communicating with each other where they want to go. You've got players making big decisions like we have in Los Angeles with the Lakers and Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James. We have Kawhi Leonard figuring out a way to get Oklahoma City. I mean, they were communicated this to get him to go to get the Clippers to trade to Oklahoma City to get George there to give up five first-round picks. So we talked about where that might be a better place for Kawhi if he wants to be in L.A.
Yeah.
Because it's a five-year window for him instead of maybe a two-year window with the Lakers.
Right.
But think about that for 1 second when you look at the brand of the NBA. I feel like the NBA today is, yeah, there's some compelling stories, but when after the first few weeks and you're kind of like, okay, this is how it's going to play out, where's the interest level?
So I'm going to say it's really good for the NBA. Because they're not going to play basketball for another 3.5 months. They finished playing 3 weeks ago. Everybody's talking about the NBA. That's a good thing.
Agreed.
That's like what sure. the NFL has.
Agreed.
And the way that the league has become hashtag this league, where it's almost like its own soap opera, it sells itself on multiple platforms. I think, and it's a little contrarian, but or maybe not, I don't know. But the way in which the players have empowered themselves is really cool. It's not the billionaires that own the teams calling the shots. It's the players saying, we're going to get ours. We're going to have fun. We're going to play the game where we want to play. And in a way, that's also spread out to different franchises. What, you know, those nexuses of power where you get, you know, Golden State until 6-7 years ago was nothing. The Clippers, you know, the last couple of years haven't been much. Granted, it's LA and the Lakers were always there, but okay. The Bucks. When was the last time the Bucks were relevant? Now they're relevant. Oklahoma City didn't have a basketball team 15 years ago. They weren't really good until 5 or 6 years ago. Oklahoma City is a basketball powerhouse now. Like I think that's really cool. Where okay, maybe you get that fluidity takes away from tradition or hanging on to stars in certain places. But these guys are bouncing around, and the game is going and growing into different markets.
And I know you want to get your point in. I'm going to let you. We can go over a little bit on this. But I will just say this. I get with what you're saying, and I have no problem with players going where they want to go. But at the end of the day, if you're top heavy, what's the point of the rest of it? Like, that's my end game. Yes, we're talking about the NBA. Yes, you and I, the NBA has been done for a month and a half, and this has been most of the show. I get all that.
That can also go for almost every other sport.
But you...
Yeah.
Where though? Like, I mean, we dissect Major League Baseball for being all about people leaving to go. And we've learned in Major League Baseball that most stars are staying in their cities now. You got a guy like Trout that decided, I'm going to sign in Anaheim, even though I haven't won anywhere. You got guys doing that. You're looking at free agency not being what it was, say, 20 years ago in Major League Baseball. Now, you can say what you want about the game, and that game is diagnosed and it's poked apart all the time for it's being too slow, or you know, we're hitting too many home runs, we're not hitting too many home runs. But in the NBA, we have players determining what owners do and what general managers do, and so if you're not a part of the Clippers and you're not a part of the Lakers this year, if you're not a part of the Celtics, if you're not a, I mean. What are you doing? Like, what's the rest of the fan base is doing with the NBA? At the end of the day, make your money, but we're colluding so much that we've got 6 or 7 teams that are great, and what's going on with the rest of it? When the season gets going and it's all top heavy, what's the point?
The beauty of the NBA trend right now is that because it's all so short term, they're almost feeding on the fanatic side of fandom, sure, which is everyone thinks next year they'll get the big fish. So everyone's watching thinking, well, this guy, I'm going to get Kevin Durant next year. The Knicks spent all year this year being okay with how bad they were because they thought they were going to get KD this year. And then all of a sudden Brooklyn does. And now Brooklyn fans get to say that they've got a bunch of superstars. Yep. And next year it'll be somebody else. And so it's not all the teams get to be great, but everyone thinks they're going to be the team next year.
Yeah. And so what I was saying before about, like, that's the case in every sport. By a week or two into, or you know, a cycle or a month or two into certain seasons, football, you know, your team's probably gonna, like, certain teams, you're like, our team's trash this year.
Right.
So what's the point? Well, that's it. You know, there's going to be some teams that are going to be good, and there's going to be some teams that are going to be bad.
But you're not going into the next season if you're bad, praying to God that the 4 best players in the league pick me. Like, I hope, like, the Knicks. Like, look at what the Knicks went through.
But it's
the Knicks situation is today.
So the reverse would be you just pray to God that your GM will pick them and give them the money that will give you guys hope. Or if you're a Premier League team and you're the fan of a Premier League club, like, ultimately, it's the managers and the agents colluding to just bring all the stars to the same teams so that, you know, you have the six or seven teams that can compete for a Champions League spot. Meanwhile, you have other teams just trying to stay in the league to make the windfall from TV revenue. And occasionally, very occasionally, like not often, you get a team like 5 years ago or 4 years ago with Leicester that came out of nowhere and shocked the world. And that's why those stories are even better. Like, it's not quite Leicester, but had Milwaukee gone and won, that would have been pretty damn cool.
I totally agree with you, and I was rooting for that. Yeah. But I don't know how many Milwaukees we have out there now, Austin.
Yeah.
Like, think about
Toronto winning
Toronto
is close to that.
Toronto was a great story. If it wasn't for Drake, we would have loved that. So Toronto's a great story. Milwaukee was a great story. Now going into next year, who is that? I think that's New Orleans. I think the only team you can look at right now going into next season that is the team, like, wow. Like, look at these young kids. They got all this. This is, they're building their organization the way you got to, I think, for long-term success. That's a team you want to root for. I mean, who's a team out there now that's like, oh, we can get behind these guys because to try to beat the big, bad 4 or 5 teams that are out there? Maybe the Celtics.
And rationally, you're right. But fans are sitting there. Celtics fans think they're going to be the team this year. The Pacers fans think they're going to be the team this year. Brooklyn.
Yep.
Like,
let me just say this. Today, they do. I get it. Today, it's fine. Today, I get, let's do it. Like, we love talking about it. It's exciting. Everybody can't wait to see how it plays out. But 2 months into the season, when it's played out the way we think it's going to be played out, and we've got all these, we've got the top teams, we've got all the garbage, in the bottom and there's nowhere and there's nowhere to hide, then what's the problem? Then what do you tell fan bases in Oklahoma City? Wait till fan bases in New York. Wait till fan bases in Orlando and Chicago. What do you tell them? What do you tell them in Dallas? What do you tell fan bases in Toronto and Milwaukee? What do you tell them? Like, I mean, where do they go? Because it's like, okay, now what are we waiting for? We just talked about this is not going to be a big free agent season next year. So the Knicks only hope for the Knicks this year was to try to get that number one pick for Zion and drive in these guys because with all that money, they lost it. Now where do the Knicks go? Now we've got so many teams with all these superstars. Like, how do we break it up? The NBA in the 80s, everybody had a superstar and you built around that. That's what made it so great, so competitive. I feel like the competitive balance in the NBA is way off. I don't know. And maybe I'm wrong, but that's the way I feel. What do you think, Austin?
I think you keep doing you, man.
That's how I do it. That's all I can do. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, it's Hot or Not time. Don't go anywhere.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
Take it away, buddy.
This is Hot or Not, brought to you by Superb Cupcakes in Williston. Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corner Shopping Center for the best cupcakes around. They will not disappoint, offering over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes that are made from scratch daily. There is no box mix at Superb. Make your day superb.
I love those cupcakes. But I have to tell you, I've eaten so much stuff this week that I got to get back on my diet, man. It's been bad.
Agreed.
Bad. Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
The Clippers are the team to beat in the NBA.
Yeah, why not? Hot. I mean, they're going to play great defense. We know that. I think Kawhi Leonard is, I think he's the best player in the NBA. I really do. He's clutch. He's got it going. I think there's going to be a lot of excitement there. Durant's not going to play this year for Brooklyn. You know, Golden State's going to be down. I mean, you know, when's Klay Thompson coming back with them? Why not? Yeah. I think the Clippers are the team to beat right now.
I'm going to go not. I think you're bringing that team together. They haven't played a single minute together.
True.
And you got, I mean, the Bucks still have Giannis.
Yep.
The Celtics are going to be good.
Yep. The Lakers, if they stay healthy,
they're going to
be good. Yep.
They do have two of the best players on the planet. Golden State, they have Steph Curry, and like they're still going to be something, right, somebody to be reckoned with.
Yeah, didn't D'Angelo Russell just sign with them as well?
Yes, so, yeah. Indiana's going to be, I think.
Indiana's going to be very good. Yep.
So ask that question after Christmas, might be a different answer, right, but right now, no, I don't think so.
Alex Morgan went too far with her tea celebration.
Go ahead, you can go first.
Nope, loved it.
Yeah, not. I mean, it's a tea celebration. Come on. I mean,
of course not. They're just mad. England's just mad that we whooped up.
If you want to know what too far for the goal celebration is, I'll tell you to go to YouTube and look up Maradona from, like, I think it was the '94 World Cup, where he basically was in some huge Coke bender and ran to the corner flag and the camera and like screamed at the camera, and you're like, whoa, easy guy.
Slow down, easy big guy. Fella.
What this women's team is doing is incredible, and the fact that they're being bashed every turn for celebrating their successes, I think is crap.
It is crap.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know, yeah, it's, they're an amazing team. They're about to win. I think they're about to win a World Cup. Let them have their fun. And I think it's, I mean, I think the only thing that I would get on them about was that 13-0 win. They were right. They celebrated like that each goal. I think that kind of showed, I could kill it. They could score 25 goals as far as I care. I don't care. You scored goals. But how they responded after those goals kind of was uncomfortable. I think that's where it started. But hey,
and
listen,
that may have soured everybody to now a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's soccer. Goal celebrations are what it's about.
And I have
about
to tell you, I think it's, I mean, the tea thing was, I mean, it's pretty original too. I would, you know,
I mean,
it's
if,
good.
There's another great clip if you want to go too far. I think it's some Icelandic team or Norwegian team, like a B league or whatever, where they have these super choreographed things where like some guy will flop down and they'll like pretend like they're actually like taking a picture like a trophy fish.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay.
I kind of like
creativity
that.
Points. Yeah,
you get a win for that.
I might be the wrong guy to ask anyway, because I didn't even think like Randy Moss mooning Green Bay was too far.
Well, you wonder if Randy Moss mooning Green Bay, if that happened in the era of the Twitter and that, if it wouldn't have been a bigger deal. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that was happening before all that stuff came, when, you know, we had all that stuff.
Fair enough. I still loved it. The Celtics free agency is a disaster so far.
Are you kidding? Not. I think what the Celtics are doing are perfect. I think if you've got to believe in Danny Ainge. I think the problem with the Celtics has been they got so good and they had all these guys that wanted and they signed all these guys. You would start to think, oh, super team here. But the reality with what you have in Brad Stevens, which is the best coach in the NBA. Brad Stevens is the best coach in the NBA. And last year he had uncoachable guys. This year he's going to have coachable guys and the Celtics are going to be pushing for a world championship.
I'm also not hot on that. Al Horford is the loss that yep. that stings, but he's also 33 years old. Like you're not going to just dump money at an aging big man.
It's true, and I think they've replaced him well, and I think you're going to see Brad Stevens at his best. I just do.
This is a team that doesn't need a big fish, so for them, free agency isn't over. And then you add in that Kemba Walker's a great addition. Enes Kanter's a good team guy. He's quotable like Kyrie, but unlike Kyrie, he's quotable in that he likes to talk trash, not that he likes to whine. And then they're going back to letting Brad Stevens lead. And when he leads, their team defense is incredible, and they run plays, and they do things well.
Yeah, watch Brad Stevens go with this team, I'm telling you.
It's a lot like what they do down the road in Foxborough.
Very true.
Bring in guys that fit the culture and are talented and can do their job.
And when does Danny Ainge get the credit for that? I mean, there were a lot of people that were all over him for a long time, and you've got to start trusting what Danny Ainge is doing there. I'm just saying, let them be and let Brad Stevens be and watch what they do.
Nathan Eovaldi will revive the Red Sox bullpen.
I'm going to say hot only because I can't get any worse. I mean, I think
exactly. I agree.
I mean, Nathan Eovaldi is a power arm. There is a transition to doing something like this, I think. But when you're a guy like Eovaldi is coming off those two major, you had Tommy John, I think, twice coming off an injury here. I mean, let him go throw 100 miles an hour and close games out in the ninth inning. The question is going to be, how do you bridge it to him?
Right.
But I think it's definitely going to, it'll give him a shot of energy, no question about
that.
Yeah,
I mean, if the starting pitching can't get you deep enough into the game and then you're wearing out the bullpen anyway, having a great closer doesn't make that big a difference.
Exactly. So.
His style works really well. It's going to be the transition and whether or not closers even matter, as Austin said, with this team that makes the difference. The Yankees don't need to make any moves at the trade deadline.
Now that's not. I mean, right now, if you're a Yankee fan like me, it's a lot of fun. They're scoring a lot of runs. They're getting it done. They come back and win. Last night, they were down in the eighth inning by a run. They get a big pinch at home run by Hicks. Go extra innings, and then Judge hits another homer, and then Gardner. I mean, they just keep winning games. But when you look at this starting rotation, there's real questions there. I mean, we don't know if Severino is going to come back. Paxton and Happ have been very inconsistent. Tanaka didn't make it through the first inning against Boston and London. You just don't know what you're getting there.
I mean, that you could say is maybe pitching just didn't travel.
Very, very true. But again, there's nobody in that. There's nobody in that rotation that you trust. I would say that the Red Sox have more guys in their rotation that you trust more than the Yankees starting rotation right now. I think the Yankees have to bring in a reliever, and they've got the pieces to do it. We'll just see who's available.
What? At some point, though, like all these guys that have been in and out and like hurt and not able to play. When they can and do come back, isn't that going to be like free agency all over again?
Very true. If Severino does come back, then there you got your ace. It's very possible. If Dellin Betances does come back, then you got your another arm in the bullpen. But I think there's a real question here that you're not, that if they don't come back and there's a real reality that they may not, you got to bring somebody in.
All right. It's time for the Mets to blow it up and rebuild.
Go ahead. You want to go first on that?
Oh, that's... can they change their color scheme? Because yeah. I'm just thinking, like, if it wasn't for the Islanders being okay, blue and orange in New York City right now is not a good, like, I don't know if it's like the knock-on effect from the Knicks or vice versa, but at least mix it up somehow, yeah.
I think, yes. I think they need to trade Syndergaard. If there was a way to trade DeGrom, I would do that too. I mean, I think this organization needs to start all over. I mean, they are in a really bad place. You've got some good young guys in there, though. You got guys like Alonso that I think is going to be a superstar in the future. Rosario at short's a good player. The kid that plays, I think it's McNeil that plays second base, is a really good player. You've got some pieces there, but I think with what you're doing, you're not going anywhere. And when you look at what's happening in the NL East, you don't have to do a whole lot to get better, and they've gotten a lot worse. And I don't blame the Mets, though. I don't get mad at what they're doing because they're just trying to compete. I think they saw an NL East that was potential to win or at least be competitive. Mm-hmm. That's why Cano and the closer from Seattle were brought in.
Yep.
It just hasn't worked out.
We got one more courtesy of Ryan Russillo and Bill Simmons.
All right.
How do you pay Roger 58? I think it's one of the worst signings of any of the things that happened this week. I think of the decade. If I told you what's
a better price for Rozier, 5.8 million or 58 million, wouldn't you have said 5.8? I mean, that would have been too low.
Yeah, right, right.
But it's what's more less low than the 58 is high, right?
So, Terry. Hello, hello.
Oh, hi.
My headphones blew out.
Gotcha.
Terry Rozier was closer to being worth 5.8 million than 58 million.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, go ahead. You can go first.
I agree. I think that's spot on. Like, that's when we had that clip from Greenberg talking about the $3 billion in guaranteed money. And the Ben Simmons getting 170 million and he's never made a three-pointer.
Yeah.
Like stuff like that. That like what you said, if they'll pay it, you're worth it. But boy, that worth ain't what it used to be.
I think what you see there is, to me, like you just said, I'm always like, if someone's willing to pay you that, then go for it and you go play. I think with what they're doing with him is they lost Kemba Walker and they're looking for an opportunity to, you know, get a superstar, a guy that can get their fan base excited. And I mean, we'll see what Rozier had a lot of upside.
I
think for me, Rozier's issue was Kyrie Irving anyway. I think the biggest issue, there was all that dynamic of what was going on in Boston. I think you get him out of there, get him out of Boston, he might flourish. So we'll see.
That run he had at the end of the 2018 playoff, or in the end of the 2018 season.
Yeah.
There were flashes of, hey, this guy could be one of the best in the league.
Exactly. Yeah. So you remember what he was before Kyrie? I mean, remember all the expectation of him before Kyrie got there?
Yep.
Maybe just getting away from Boston, away from Kyrie, and he'll flourish. We'll see how it
was
goes.
He worth $58 million to the Celtics? No.
No.
To Charlotte? Yeah.
I think definitely to Charlotte. Yeah. I mean, you got to tell your fan base, we're replacing, we're going to be all right. You've got to tell your fan base that. That's what we're talking about the NBA. That's why these guys are making that kind of money. Because you have the have and have nots. The have nots are trying to compete. You got to throw big money at a guy like Rozier to try to tell your fan base we're still going to try to win. That's it. Is that it? Is that hot or not?
That's hot or not.
We'll be right back.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
There's a lot going on our station and all our sister stations this week, buddy. Today, you get 3:10 coverage with the Sox in Detroit. The Red Sox try to continue their winning ways against the Detroit Tigers, not the Detroit Lions, Aaron. On 960 The Zone at 6:30 tonight, you can get a little NASCAR race if you want to get into NASCAR. And then WVMT's got the Yankees in Tampa Bay. Coverage starts at 3:30. Our Green City Garage poll question. Green City Garage located at 49B Commerce Avenue, Unit 5 in South Burlington. Phone number 802-651-9299. Our question today was, is the disastrous offseason experienced by the Knicks bad luck, or is it just their culture in the Big Apple? What's the answer today, buddy?
80% say the Knicks are the problem.
80% say the Knicks are the problem. I agree with them. I think there's something going on in New York that is making people not want to go there. It just seems like it, you know?
Yeah. It's not luck. Because
They had money to splash around. And I feel like if they got the right guys, the future in New York was bright.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Now, like, really, what is the future in New York to be a Knick? Well, honestly,
the problem rhymes with games rolling.
Yes, it does. Yep.
I feel for Knick fans. I really do. And I'm not a Knick fan at all. People think I'm because I'm a New York guy. Like, I'm not a Knick fan, but I feel for them. And I it's too bad because I don't know where now. I don't know where. What do you do? Like, what do you do? Who's the big guy coming out next? I mean, can you try to flop and hopefully get the number one pick and find someone to get next to RJ Barrett? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I just don't know what to say. There's not much you can say.
There really isn't. I think it's amazing. All right. A lot of good talk there. I want to thank Jen McCaffrey from The Athletic. Talk a little Red Sox. The Red Sox have played some better baseball. They're two games out, I think, for the number one wild card. So they have a lot of important games coming up. The trade deadline's coming. The All-Star game this week. You like the baseball All-Star game?
I don't dislike it. Will I watch it? I don't know.
Yeah. The Home Run Derby is usually pretty compelling, I think. I don't know if I'll watch the Home Run Derby because I'm not sure the names in there. I'm too excited.
Is Berman calling it?
I don't know. It's a good question.
If he's not, I'd be more prone to.
If he's not, you'll watch
it. Yes.
gone. You don't want to listen to that? No. I kind of got old in the home run derby contest because
it's all night. It's like 3 hours then.
You almost have to mute that. Hey, guys, we are Sports Saturday. We're here every Saturday from 10 a.m. to noon. I'm Jeff. He's Austin. He's Aaron. Aaron, welcome back, buddy. It's been nice to have you back,
man.
We missed you, too. We'll see you guys next week. Don't miss it. Stay here all week. You got the huddle all week. You got us on Saturday. Have a nice weekend, everybody. Happy 4th of July.